This is the DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg podcast.
I'm a big star, you know.
Listen live weekday mornings from 5 to 8 a.m. on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play ESPN New York 98.7.
This is DCR.
I don't want the double plow today.
Did he double plow?
Not only did he double plow the other day, Sherry yells down from upstairs yesterday, "You're not going to believe this. The plow guy is here." I said, "You got to be kidding me."
In the bedroom or outside?
Outside, thankfully.
Okay.
So I go outside. No, I don't need the sexy music. I go outside. I was empowered. I'm great with vendors, and I walked right up to this guy. I said, "Excuse me, you're not going to plow the driveway here." He goes, "Well, your neighbor said he wants the whole thing plowed." I said, "Well, plow his, and don't touch this driveway."
This is DCR.
Said, "You're sure?" He said, "It could get very icy." I said, "Yeah, I'm sure. Leave me alone."
On 98.7 ESPN.
Oh, yeah. We get rolling in the 7 o'clock hour. DCR with you, 98.7 ESPN, presented by Progressive Insurance. A man with a check mark, Mike Tenenbaum, joins us here on 98.7 ESPN. Mike, I don't know if you knew this. There was a controversy going on with the show. Rick did not have his Twitter check mark for weeks and weeks and weeks. And I know you said that could stand in the way of you joining the show. He got it back last night, so I'm glad that all is forgotten and forgiven here.
That was truly outcome determinative, so I'm glad that we have peace back in the kingdom, and you know, Rick is verified the way he should be.
I knew you'd be pleased about that. So let me ask you this. The Jets, or rumors or sources or whatever comes out yesterday, and I guess they're nowhere near making their decision. They still need to do their full, you know, reports on all these quarterbacks and determine if Darnold is better and what could they get via trade and all this kind of stuff. What's the time frame for when the Jets should know, as far as how close we get to the draft, what in fact their plan is to do this year?
Yeah, it's really mid-March, guys. They really need to have their plan ready to go by the time free agency starts, because if they're not going to extend Sam Darnold in terms of exercising the option, which they could do after the draft, they really should think about, hey, do we want to sign a short-term quarterback, try to trade for someone like Marcus Mariota, sign Ryan Fitzpatrick, and then draft Zach Wilson? These are complementary decisions. Likewise, if you're going to keep Darnold and maybe draft Penei Sewell from Oregon, then you're going to attack free agency differently. So while they may not say it publicly, their actions will determine very quickly early in free agency what they're going to do.
Mike, how much does what you can get for that second overall pick influence what you do with Sam?
You know, Rick, I think that's secondary. I think at the end of the day, we talked about this on Get Up yesterday, and we're going to keep talking about it, which is, I think you just got to sit there and say, who's better, Sam Darnold or Zach Wilson? In my opinion, I would take Wilson. I think after 3 years, what we've seen is Sam Darnold has shown some flashes, but he's just not as good a player as Zach Wilson. When you really watch Zach Wilson and see the plays he can make, both in the pocket, outside the pocket, arm strength, he's a better player. And I think secondarily you say, okay, we're going to move on from Sam Darnold. Can we get a second or a third round pick from Chicago and then go from there?
Mike, I need you to help me connect the dots with Sam Darnold, because I've long said that if you're not going to extend his fifth-year option, then you're probably talking about moving off of him and finding another option at the quarterback spot. So when I saw that report by Ian Rappaport and others yesterday that said the Jets were going to evaluate all the quarterbacks coming out in this draft, there are people that are in the business that said the Jets are not expected to pick up Sam's fifth-year option. So if that is the case, then are we talking about Sam being done with the Jets?
Yes, I certainly think so. You know, if you go back to what happened with Chicago, they didn't exercise the option on Mitch Trubisky, and look where they are. They're nowhere. And I think you're in a situation here where if you're the Jets, you got to learn from that mistake, Chris, which is Sam Darnold the guy? Great. Exercise the option, talk about a long-term extension. If he's not, then move on from him, because you're stopping progress. And if you're the Bears, you have no quarterback, and really it doesn't look like you have a plan. So I think those are very much connected, Chris, which is if you're not going to exercise the fifth-year option, move on from Sam Darnold.
Mike Tenenbaum with us here, 98.7 ESPN. So you say you'd move on from Darnold and you would take Wilson. How do you have the quarterbacks ranked, though, between – I mean, there's a lot of them, right? Lance, Wilson, Fields. How do you have them ranked as far as who you would take to, and how close is it in your mind?
Yeah, Glad we're not ranking the three of you guys. It's, you know, that'd be much much harder.
Whoa. It better not be a difficult decision, Mike.
I think it would be. You know what, Mike? Forget about my question. I'd like to redo it. Mike Tenenbaum with us here, 98.70 ESPN. Mike, if you were drafting the three of us, where would you go?
You know, I would have to talk to Tim McCarthy, but I got to tell you, it would have to start with people who are verified on Twitter. So that's, you know.
Wow.
So anyway, as I was saying, Trevor Lawrence, Zach Wilson, Mac Jones is three for me, guys. I think he's a little bit underrated. When you really study him, I mean, everyone's going to talk about what they had at Alabama, offensive line, the weapons, all true. But he's a really good player, very accurate, very smart. My fourth guy is Justin Fields, and I think Justin Fields is going to pay a little bit of a Ryan Day tax. And what I mean by that, if you carefully study, like the Clemson game, for example, he played incredibly well, and I think Fields is going to be a good player. But some of these guys are so wide open because I think Ryan Day, the head coach at Ohio State, does such a great job. And then fifth to me would be Trey Lance, a very intriguing prospect from North Dakota where Carson Wentz played. He only played in one game this year, and if the four of us were running a franchise and we had to bet our future, it's hard to bet our future on a guy that played one game and say, hey, he could come in from day one and be our starter.
My former favorite guest, Mike Tenenbaum, joins us here in the show. Mike, with the salary cap going down to the 180, what are your expectations for free agency as far as, you know, it's being reported that, you know, you could see more, you know, one-year deals, you know, kind of like, you know, super teams being built up. What are your expectations for free agency?
Yeah, you know, to me, Rick, it's going to be the haves and the have-nots. And I think there's going to be a few guys that are going to crush it, that are just going to, you know, deserve it. Guys like Shaq Barrett, for example, Tampa Bay, he'll get a massive deal if he doesn't get franchised. I think, obviously, it starts with Dak Prescott. We'll see what happens in Dallas. But I think the middle class is going to get really squeezed, and we go to Kansas City, for example. A couple of good players like Daniel Sorensen, a very good starting safety. Sammy Watkins, a good receiver. I think that middle class is going to get squeezed, and you're going to have really great veteran players and a lot of rookies and then a few veterans close to the minimum.
Mike, yesterday Cam Newton was on the I Am Athlete podcast with B. Marshall and Chad Johnson and Freddie T. And he said that, you know, he's one of the 32 best quarterbacks in the National Football League. And he said that he's not 32. What are your thoughts on Cam Newton as a viable option for a starting quarterback job in 2021?
You know, Chris, if we go back last year, it took a while. It took several months for him to get a job with New England. I was wrong. I thought he would have played better. Right now, he just seems like a skilled, diminished player that hasn't returned from the same level he was at before surgery. So I think for him, it may take a while, and he may have to go to a place like a Denver with a Drew Lock or someplace where maybe the starter isn't as established. But based on how he played last year, guys, I don't see him going in as a frontline starter from day one.
Mike Tenenbaum joining us here on the Goodyear Hotline, 98.7 ESPN. So I was reading something yesterday that said New England is looking at every single option at quarterback. What's your best guess? And I'm not going to hold you to anything now, 2 months before the draft even happens. But if you are Bill Belichick, if you're New England, if you're thinking of that mindset, what do you think they do this year?
Well, if you look at the history of Coach Belichick going back to Cleveland and guys like Eric Zier, and then all the way through New England, Tom Brady, Jacoby Brissett, Jimmy Garoppolo, they're all really smart guys, like really, really sharp guys. Like, that's really important to him. I wouldn't be surprised for him to try to go after a veteran like Ryan Fitzpatrick, maybe Marcus Mariota, and then try to draft somebody. I think Mac Jones makes a ton of sense, the obvious connection, you know, with Nick Saban at Alabama. So we'll see how it plays out. But I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, at the end of the day, Dave, he goes veteran and also in the draft.
See, Dave, this is why me and Bill Belichick are so tight. Ryan Fitzpatrick, another Harvard guy like myself.
Oh, here we go.
Intelligence. So, Mike, I was watching, I forget which show I was watching yesterday, but it's being reported that Houston's not even taking phone calls right now about Deshaun Watson. What is their end game? What exactly are they doing right now at the moment?
You know, Rick, worst case scenario for them is if they do nothing, which I understand, and then they get into September and he doesn't show up. And I think if you have to make a decision, you have to say, hey, David Culley, Cal McNair, Nick Cassero, get in a room and say, we're going to go a calendar year and we got to wait this thing out, or you got to trade him tomorrow. Because if you wait and then capitulate in September, that's worst case scenario. So if I'm them, you're either in this for the long haul or trade him for a massive draft haul and move on. But you can't be anywhere in the middle, and that's where I'm concerned this thing winds up, because if you get to September and he doesn't show up, it's really going to be a very difficult situation for Houston.
Mike, yesterday Michael Silver of NFL Media reported that a third of the league was calling the Seahawks about Russell Wilson, and that those teams came away with the belief that any conversations for trading for Russ would involve three first-round picks as the base of a deal. Now, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like if a player was untouchable, there wouldn't be a framework for a potential trade and compensation coming back to the team. So my serious question to you is, could we talk about Russell Wilson being traded at some point in the next calendar year from Seattle?
Yeah, Chris, I saw the same thing and had a similar thought. And I think where we are, guys, is a historic NFL offseason. And Aaron Rodgers, Dak Prescott, we've talked about Deshaun Watson, and most notably now Russell Wilson. If they're on different teams, we are looking at a new era in the NFL where it's a lot more like the NBA. And, boy, it's fascinating. And I think if you're Seattle, you're probably saying, hey, this guy's over 30, and if we get three first-round picks, maybe we should take it. And the fact that no one denied that report tells me there's a lot there.
Mike, as always, we appreciate you. We appreciate your verification on Twitter. You wake up very early, by the way. When there's a tweet sent out at like 4:30, 4:40, you're going to be on the show. I noticed before 5 o'clock in the morning, that's been retweeted by you.
Well, I appreciate it. I take X2Performance.com. It's an all-natural, healthy performance drink that gets me going early morning so I can get up and listen to you guys. And all three of you guys would be my first-round picks, so it's always great to be on with you.
You're copping out there. But all right, we love you anyhow. Mike, great stuff. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, guys. Thank you.
All right, good stuff.
I'll take that, though. A lot of pressure going first overall. I would be happy going second.
Well, you've gone first overall. You've lived
I
that
didn't
life.
Work out. That didn't really work out well.
I think it would be better going first overall than being a fourth-round pick.
Being a sixth-round pick worked out for Tom Brady.
Good point. Fair point.
Was he 199?
You believe Henrik Lundqvist was a seventh-round pick?
That's crazy. Did they not expect
insane.
Him to come over and play in the NHL?
Yeah, that was a different time. It was concerned, that he would stay over in Sweden.
Right. So if he was like an American-born goalie and you knew he was going to be here, there's no way he would have gone in the seventh round.
No, there's no chance with how good he was, no.
Do you know how big the NFL draft used to be like 15, 16 rounds?
No, I know. I get
crazy.
It.
Crazy.
And you probably watched all the rounds.
I don't think it was even televised when you talk about it.
Yeah, well, I didn't even think it was fully televised back in the day. They used to do it in like a hotel room, like a banquet hall.
It was in Manhattan. The Hilton or something, Dave?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Dave, what would you give? Now. What would you, as far as, I don't know how to frame this question.
Take your time.
If you were, what would you give to have the opportunity to actually sit in the Giants draft room and participate?
I mean, what are you looking for, like a? An organ or
No, I'm not looking for an organ. Like, where would you put that? Like on sports experience? I guess that's how to frame it.
I would love that. I feel like that'd be
right up your alley.
Oh, wouldn't you?
Oh, yeah.
But here's my concern. I used to write letters all the time to the Giants. Here's my worry is that I'm sitting there and they're like, you have to sit in the corner. You have to be quiet. And then they're like, we're going to take Andrew Thomas 4. I'm like, no. Hang on a minute, Dave. We can't
He's
do that.
Terrible.
That's my worry.
No, but I think part of the experience would be, like, you just don't have to, like, it's not like, hey, Dave, you can be in the room, but just sit there and keep your mouth shut. Like, part of the experience
like I can be involved?
Well, you don't make the decisions, but they'd be like, yeah, so, Dave, we're thinking about Andrew Thomas. What do you think?
Like that kind of party.
Oh. And you could give your opinion.
How great. You know what? Honestly, I would love to do it at any level in any sport. Like, if you told me I could be in the Rangers war room or the Islanders war room and just to see how it goes down, I would love that. Wouldn't you?
Every second of it.
Have you ever done it with hockey?
I've done free agency. I didn't get to sit in the whole drafting process. I was there for some free agency stuff, like trying to help recruit players and stuff.
That's got to be pretty cool though, no?
Yeah, it was really cool. But I mean, with the draft, you start talking about all the different things, like psych exams and all the different things that go into actually making the selections.
Talking about shaping the franchise. Be unbelievable.
Dude, I'm telling you, like Mike Milbury pointed, like one of the reasons why he drafted me where he drafted me was because we're doing some like during the combine, we're doing a bunch of tests and everything else. But it's like it's like a herd of cattle, right? Like you got no shirt on, you're going through all these like different exercises and everything else, and you're not even paying attention to who's watching. But I guess he was watching me do a grip strength test. And I got, like, my hand was sweaty, and I was doing it initially, and it slipped. And the guy was going to give me a score. And I was like, no, we're not doing that. I'm doing it again. My hand slipped. And I was, like, persistent about, no, I want to do this again. I can get a better score. And he saw me do that and was like, oh, this guy's a really competitive guy. But he actually played, like, that was baked into him making the decision.
That's kind of concerning and amazing, though, all wrapped up into one.
Thanks for listening to the DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg podcast.
You're absolutely right.
Catch the show on demand wherever and whenever you want. Just subscribe to us, rate us, and review us wherever you get your podcasts.
Haynes, with a great tweet, and I think it's accurate. I think you should heed the advice that he's trying to give you. He said, sounds like Rick spent a lot of time screaming at his team last night. You got to protect those pipes, Rico. That's your moneymaker now.
You know what, Dave? I owe it to the kids to give them everything I got. Can't worry about protecting the voice.
But you're saying you don't owe it to our listening audience, which is a larger amount of people than the kids on the team.
It doesn't sound that bad, does it?
I actually didn't notice anything, to be honest with you. Nothing.
Yeah, I feel like it sounds like a little bit... almost so sexy, I thought.
I think so, too. Now, if I say that, I know Chris is going to become uncomfortable, so I don't want to go there.
I mean, it can't make me more uncomfortable than when you said that he smelled delicious. You call the man Delicious D. I mean, I don't know if there's anything that could make me more uncomfortable.
I find his odor to be amorous, to be honest with you.
If I had a dollar for every time I've heard that, Dave, I'll tell you what.
You'd probably have a dollar. Yeah.
I don't want the double plow today.
Yeah. You didn't have to play that soundbite right after I said that. Guests on DCR PRV, the Goodyear hotline.
I'll give it to you whenever you want it.
Also unnecessary. And he gave it to me quickly, so I was very appreciative of it.
All right, Santiago, enough. Enough.
Well done.
We're doing three stars today, okay? You focus on the three stars and not the drops for the next 35 minutes. For God's sakes.
Gosh, that's hilarious.
All right, can we turn our attention to the great Mets shortstop, Francisco Lindor? He addressed the media yesterday. I've said this before, Rick and Chris. I don't think that Mets fans appreciate how great this guy is going to be because he's in Cleveland. And if you're a National League guy and you're watching the Mets most nights, you're not spending a lot of time on Francisco Lindor. Chris, I expect him to be a great player for the Mets.
Oh, no question about it, Dave. I mean, you could make an argument that he's the best middle infielder in all of baseball. Like, that's how good that dude is. And so when you trade for a guy like that at 27, I mean, you would expect that he's going to be, you know, one of the all-time greats in your franchise. I mean, the only reason he's not still in Cleveland is because they realized they weren't going to be able to afford him on a contract extension. So, yeah, I think he's going to be outstanding for the Mets. What I don't understand about Francisco Lindor is why he's saying it's a little bit too early to start talking about contract extension. Because if I had somebody lined up to throw $300 million at me, it's never too early to get those talks going. Never.
Yeah, I don't understand that either. But, maybe there's a method to his madness. I'm sure he loves seeing the Fernando Tatis deal for $340. But, I mean, Dave, go back in your head. I mean, you tell me, as far as productivity, talent, what he brings both sides, offensively and defensively, when was the last time the Mets had someone as good as Francisco Lindor?
Beltran, maybe?
Oh, at that point, though?
Piazza?
Right?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I know this is kind of sacrilege to say. I think he might be better than David Wright.
He's definitely the best shortstop that you've ever had.
Oh.
That's
not even up for debate, right? Even better than the great Frank Tavares of the early 80s.
And you know what, too? I mean, Mets fans that haven't paid much attention to Francisco Lindor, like the amount of energy, the joy he plays with.
And he's likable, too.
Yeah. How about when he was, when he's getting a chance to listen to him when he's mic'd up, too. I mean, just like as far as like what he's, you know, what he's noticing during a game and everything else. This guy is, Mets fans are going to fall in love with this dude.
I think so as well. Let's take a listen. He addressed the media yesterday. First cut is, will you test free agency following that monstrous Tatis deal?
I've never been scared of free agency, so it's not like I got to rush to sign a deal or I got to rush. I hope I can't wait for free agency. You know, I live life on a daily basis, so $340 million is a great deal, you know, it's a big deal. So I'm happy for him, and I messaged him, I said, congrats, man, you did your thing, man, I'm happy for you.
What kind of deal is Lindor going to get, Rick, when we actually get there?
Well, he'll be 28 in November. So, I mean, he's going to be north of $30 million a year.
So we're looking at an 8-year deal? A 10-year deal?
Oh, 10-year deal. What concerns me, I mean, Chris said it, but yeah, I'm glad you're not scared of free agency. We're not worried about you. The Mets fan is scared to death about free agency.
Terrified.
Yeah, I don't need to see you go to free agency. Let's not test free agency. Let's start working on this extension. Let's get this thing wrapped up.
Well, maybe that's the method to his madness, though, Rico. I mean, he's trying to see if the Mets as an organization will pay the premium and give him more years tacked onto the deal, which guarantees him more money for his playing career. Because you're talking about, you know, signing a contract extension at 28 years old. This is going to be his last big deal. So you got to maximize it. And when you say maximize it, to me, that's not an 8-year deal. To me, that's a 10-year deal. That's a 12-year deal like Mookie Betts signed with the Dodgers.
So 10 and I mean, something like Tatis guy, you'd have to imagine, right? $32 million a year, something like that?
I would probably, Dave, it might not just be 10. It could be 12.
Oh, God.
Yeah, give me that 12 years, $360 million. Let's go with that Mookie Betts territory.
I can't imagine they made the deal to not sign him. Like, their intent internally has to be he's going to be a Met for a very long time.
Well, that's what he's trying to leverage, though, Dave. He's trying to leverage that, okay, you gave this haul to Cleveland in order to bring me over here, and now I want you to pay the premium to get me locked up before free agency kicks off this coming winter. Like, that's the leverage in the negotiation that he has. But the other thing that he's got to be cognizant of is the uncertainty of what's going to happen with the business of the sport after this year, because they don't have a CBA that's in place. And so you just wonder, you know, is it in his best interest to sign a contract and lock in now as opposed to later?
I mean, it could make sense. I just don't understand how, and I don't know that this is even on the table, Rick, but if you're offered like a 10 years, $300 million.
He's going to get more than that. Now he's going to get more than that.
So what
do you mean he's
going to
get more than that?
350?
I mean,
you think he's going to make more than $30 million a year?
Yeah, I think he makes more than $30 million a year on average.
What do you think it ends up being?
I mean, you got to imagine he's looking at that Mookie Betts deal.
That's $30 million a year, though, right?
Yeah, that's right around $30 million a year. But I mean, you're talking about him having, I mean, well, both of them have, you know, crazy amounts of leverage. Yeah, he's going to be looking for more than $300 million bucks. He has to.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree with that.
Machado signed for $300 million.
Yeah,
Bryce Harper for over $300 million.
10 for $320 million.
I think it's going to come down to the years. The average annual value to me is, I think that's pretty much, you know, established. I think it's just a matter of how many years are the Mets willing to tack on to that deal.
Right.
Knowing at the back end of that deal, you're not going to like it, but the position that he's in, with everything that the Mets gave up to give him and essentially anointing him as one of the faces of their franchise with Jacob deGrom, I think that he'll be able to get the Mets to pay that premium, which is giving them that, you know, 12-year deal, 13-year deal, something like that.
And we're talking about this guy being here at 40. That's kind of scary. Let's go to Sal in Valley Stream. Sal, you're next up on 98.7.
Hold on, guys. Hold on.
Oh, yeah. The last thing I want to do is rush you, Sal. Take as much time as you need.
Okay. Hello again, guys. I want to get in a little bit today about, you know, Mets spring training, what's going on. I heard you guys mention Francisco Lindor, you know, about him coming to the Mets. I heard the guy who does the Saturdays on WFAN from 6 to 9:30. You guys know who that is? It's Richard Lear.
Oh, it doesn't matter who it is or where it is. What's the point here, Sal? Well, that's silliness with Sal.
Silliness. What was he going to say?
I don't know.
I didn't even get his question.
Well, I mean, it didn't sound like it was heading in a great direction there, so we let him go.
Okay.
It was very strange.
I think, Dave, I mean, you're at a point now where there's no chance you can allow Francisco Lindor to get the free agency.
No way in hell.
So, I mean, Mookie Betts, his extension brings him to, I mean, 2032. He'll be 39 years old in his final season.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you're going to have to eat a couple years where, I mean, he's not going to be the same shortstop. probably more DH and
that's
whatever
fine.
Else.
But 12 years, I mean, to think about a 39-year-old is, I'd rather give him more money for less years, if that's possible.
Well, I think, in a perfect world, that's exactly what you'd like to do. But, I mean, he's the one that holds all the cards at the moment.
Yeah, and you got to get it done, and I think they will. And I think the more you watch him, if you're a fan of the Mets, the more you'll kind of fall in love with him as this season gets rolling.
Thanks for listening to the DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg podcast.
I don't wake up at 4 a.m. to wear a swim shirt.
Looking for more access to the show? Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at DCR on ESPN.
This is not New York news, but it has some New York flavor to it. I don't know if you guys saw this being reported all over the place. Leaked sources say the Mavericks are very quietly gauging interest in what Kristaps Porzingis would net in a trade. Now, the Knicks didn't get a lot for him, and that's a disappointing thing to me. But if he gets dealt again and they get better, he gets dealt again and he just is not the player that we expect him to be, do you look differently on that trade, Rick, with knowing the fact that now Dallas is looking to potentially trade him?
Yeah, absolutely. How can you not? I mean, that's why when you make deals like that, you can't... I get instant reaction. You're upset that they traded Kristaps Porzingis, but you got to let it marinate for a couple years and see how you feel about it. And if he gets traded again, I think you'd feel like you won that trade.
No, I don't agree with you.
No, you can't feel like you won that trade. I mean, because you didn't really get anything in return except
right.
for cap space.
That's
love
right.
the cap space.
Like,
love
I think
it.
That
you
has
can,
to factor into
like,
how you evaluate it.
You can feel like trading him was warranted,
yeah.
but you got nothing in return.
I got the hope.
You
did.
You're not trading a guy and go 20-10 for hope.
Can't stay healthy. Guy can't stay healthy, man.
Come on. The prize piece was Dennis Smith. He's terrible.
And Dennis Smith was not a...
he's not even an NBA player at this point of his career.
Don't speak negatively about Dennis Smith, would you please?
So who can I speak negatively about if not Dennis Smith?
Kristaps Porzingis. Let's talk negatively about him.
No.
You're nuts with this deal, take. Too. Monster deal with the Mavericks. What do you mean? The whole reason we traded him at the time was because we were under the impression that we were going to get Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And that didn't work out.
Not even close.
So, yeah, I mean, it sucked that we had to move on, but there was the hope that it was going to be, lead to something better, and it didn't.
But you shouldn't have to trade a terrific player just for the hope that now you've cleared cap space. You should have gotten something in return for him.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you, but I mean, what do you want me to tell you?
No.
The deal is done.
For you to tell me anything.
The deal is done. They signed up to a huge extension, and now they're looking to move him.
But and this is what we talked about earlier in the show with me being a bad guy and the whole Mac McClung rooting for him to fail like he did last night because he left Georgetown. I think I'm a bad guy. I am not opposed to watching Kristaps Porzingis not succeed in the NBA.
I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
I mean, I wouldn't actively root. I mean, I don't know how hard you actively rooting against him. I mean, I don't go out of my way to root against
him.
Well,
Dave is rooting against Matt McClung. I got to imagine that he's going to be rooting.
Yeah, I have a special level that I can bring it to. If KP doesn't succeed, I have no issues with that at all.
Yeah, I can't imagine taking the time out of my day to just actively root against
him. It's exhausting, I'll tell you that.
Hate.
It's not easy to be.
That seems like it's draining.
It's mentally exhausting. That's why I sleep so well every night. It's no way to be. It's not normal.
No, it really isn't.
No.
No, it
but
isn't.
But if they trade KP, I think that the Knicks fan feels at least some validation of, they won this trade so dramatically. That's what everybody said. But even Dallas couldn't put him with Luka Doncic and succeed? You'd feel decent about that if you're the Knicks, I think.
Yeah, but it's unfortunate. I mean, we saw what he was capable of doing. And the guy, no fault of the Knicks, the guy couldn't stay healthy. But at the time, I mean, when you drafted him, I mean, there were high hopes. And then between his brother, how things were managed and everything else, I mean, things went sideways in a hurry.
It's amazing. It went from you love him, hate him, love him, and now you dislike him yet again. All right, spend your tax return wisely with Straight Talk Wireless. You can get a Samsung Galaxy A51 for $199, plus get the $45 unlimited talk, text, and data plan with no contract on America's best networks for up to 50% less. Tune out the nonsense. Tune into Straight Talk. I want to get to an anniversary today from 1985, but you guys will know it the second we hear the audio. But first, let's go to our dear buddy, Spike in Jersey. Spike, you're next up on 98.7 ESPN.
Good morning, my friends. Just looking up Dennis Smith Jr.'s first outing for the Pistons. 15 minutes, 4 turnovers, 6 points. You know, he was highly touted. Dave, where did he go? North Carolina State?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. So he went there and he was touted, and I never liked it. I didn't think he was much. He certainly had his opportunity as a Knick. And, Chris, you were right. We did get cap space. But with Porzingis, listen, Porzingis was never a number one. Was always a number two, and he has the perfect setup. And if you're noticing in the NBA now, and I'll want to say one thing about tonight's game, thanks, guys. It's starting to sort out in the East. Toronto, you know, the better teams are gathering their momentum, for whether it was the bubble or whether it was practice or Toronto's playing in Orlando. The Knicks, wherever they finish, is fine with me as long as they play hard. I would prefer the playoffs. I am so psyched for tonight. I really am.
You're not going, are you, Spike?
No. I gave up my tickets years ago. Just got too expensive for me. Funny story. My ticket started off at $12. It wound up at $400. Yeah, it's over 30-something years. But no, if I could, I wouldn't a second. But it's too complicated for me right now. Are they allowing – you have to come in with a COVID negative test in New York?
Yes.
And
Rick, you have to have two negative tests, right?
72 hours before, and then when you show up, you get another rapid test before you go in.
So I guess tests. If you're going to the game tonight, make sure that you go well in advance of the game. You don't want to be, you know, pulling up to the Garden at 6:55. You want to get there well in advance.
Yeah, I'm sure when you buy your tickets, they kind of, you know, give you a rundown of what's required and what happens when you get there.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, we'll get into this. Domingo Germán, I guess, is starting to speak, and I want to read you a couple quotes, and we'll hear from Aaron Boone in just a moment on that. But I want to bring you back to 1985. I'm going to give you clues, and you tell me when you get it. I don't think it'll take long. 1985, head coach, chair tossing.
That's Bobby Knight.
There you go. That is exactly right. February 23rd, 1985, and this happened.
Steve Reed, an excellent free throw shooter, will have the honor of shooting the technicals.
Look at here. Bobby Knight just threw his chair. Clear across the free throw lane.
And I think Fred
unbelievable. Jackson. He picked up another tee.
Can you imagine that? A coach threw a chair onto the court? If that would happen nowadays, people would lose their minds.
Yeah, they lose their minds, but I could imagine. I mean, I've seen stuff like that happen. No, I mean, I've seen coaches throw, you know, sticks on the ice.
I've seen coaches throw punches at other coaches on the sideline. So throwing a chair is within the realm.
Oh my God, that is Bobby Knight would last about 10 minutes in modern basketball now, wouldn't he?
Yeah, it'd be tough. That would be tough. I don't know if that coaching style plays well anymore.
No, hell of a coach, though. Hell of a coach.
He was a great coach. So yeah. We can move to Germán, or I can quickly tell you my Bobby Knight story.
Could I quickly just win the argument as far as the Kristaps Porzingis trade was concerned?
Yeah.
And the reason why I initially said what I said till you talked me out of it. Let's also remember, too, not only do we have the Dallas Mavericks first-round picks,
yeah,
the cap space that was intended for Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving was then used to sign Julius Randle, who's now an all-star, and, Marcus Morris, who turned into, when we traded him, the pick that got us quickly.
Yeah, that's fine. All I'm saying is you could have gotten more in return for Kristaps Porzingis.
Well, I mean, you still got two first-round picks, and you got Julius Randle, and you got IQ. Not too bad.
It's not awful. It's not. And if they trade him, I think it kind of validates you a little bit more. All right, so do you want to hear the Bobby Knight story
yes.
My encounter with him? You do?
I don't have to.
I don't want to put you
on
the spot.
No, I love your stories. I don't believe all of them. Like, I don't believe you told the plow guy that you don't want your driveway. I think it's plowed. And
I don't want the double plow today. I'm going to take a photo right after the show and tweet it to you and send it to you. Because why would I lie about that?
Because you like to play tough guy on the radio. I just walked
tough
up to
guy.
Him. Just strolled up to him. You will not plow my driveway.
I walked up to him. I said, you're not going to plow the driveway. And just to show, the guy had a beautiful Australian accent. And
no,
it
we
threw
didn't.
Me.
Come on.
I swear to you.
Did you say New Jersey? Where are you from? New Jersey.
Wait, South Jersey? The Atlantic City area? All right. So here's my quick Bobby Knight story, and then we'll get to this Domingo Germán story. So I'm friendly with Brandon Steiner, right? He's in the memorabilia business. And he invites me over to his warehouse because Victor Cruz is signing autographs, and he knows I'm a huge Giants fan. So he says, why don't you come by? Victor Cruz is going to be there. The three of us will go out for lunch after, and it'll be great. I was like, okay, that's fine. I go there. Victor Cruz is late, and he's got to continue to sign, so it's not gonna happen. So Brandon says, but you know what? Instead, Bobby Knight is also here, and we're going to go back to the house, and the three of us can have lunch if you'd like to do that. So I have a chance to sit down and have lunch with Bobby Knight? Yes, of course I want to do that. So we go back to Brandon's house, and we're sitting there, and Bobby Knight, the only thing I can compare him to is like Elaine's father on Seinfeld, who is just like, doesn't like anything, and everything is miserable. So it's very awkward, because I don't have a lot to say. And usually I'm not at a loss for words, but it's Bobby Knight, and it's not like it's free-flowing conversation. So Brandon puts out, like, some fruit, and there's cherries. And I'm anxious, and I'm nervous, because it's a very uncomfortable situation. I say, boy, Bobby, the cherries can be a delicious fruit, huh? And he turns, he goes, I almost choked on a cherry as a child. And I was like, oh, okay. And then there's dead silence again, and no one is saying anything. And I don't know about you guys, but whenever I'm in the situation where no one's saying anything, I feel like I have to say something. So it's a beautiful day, and I look outside, and Brandon has this sensational pool, and it's sunny, and the sun is shining on. I say, boy, that's a beautiful pool you have there, Brandon. I said, Bobby, you like to swim? I almost drowned as a child in a lake. I don't swim, haven't swam in 47 years. I'm like, oh, God. And the rest of the lunch, I just tried to, I put my head down, and it was very awkward and very uncomfortable. Oh, my God.
What you should have done, you should have taken a chair. Once he said he wasn't going to eat the cherry, you take a chair, you throw the chair. And you said, Bobby, you'll get back on the wagon. You'll eat this cherry, Bobby.
You're going to eat this cherry. It's the last thing you do.
And you're going to like it.
Have you ever had like a lunch or anything like that where it's so awkward that you don't know what to do or where to look or anything?
Oh, yeah. Everybody's been there, Dave. Oh. Everybody's been there. But you got to do something to try to break up the awkward
I tried. I mentioned the cherries. I mentioned the swimming, whatever. Almost died in many different ways as a child.
But listen, even if you got to get to the point where you're self-deprecating, Dave, you got to be able to try to get him to crack a smile. And then once you do that, you're good.
Yeah, I do the exact same thing.
Oh.
Is that when it's like real awkward, I decide I'm going to talk more for some reason.
And it was awful. And then, as you say, the piece de resistance, it's ending. We leave the house. We walk outside. I'm going to my car. I'm like, listen, Bobby, it was really great to meet you. You would have thought that I was his grandson of 52 years. He's like, oh, what a pleasure. Like, he was so emphatic about sitting and having lunch and breaking bread was one of the highlights for him. But it was very awkward and very uncomfortable. Whew.
You might have missed an opportunity, though. Now, I've never met him, but he seems like the kind of guy that, like, if you brought up, I don't know, you went into, like, the Dave Rothenberg, you know, crazy history of college basketball and started rattling off names, that may have been something, rather than the fruit spread.
Yeah, I don't know that it would have impressed him. I don't know that anything I could have done that day would have, in fact, impressed him. DCR presented by Progressive Insurance. You could save big when you bundle your auto, home, motorcycle, RV, or boat. Visit Progressive.com. Just to let Santiago know, we're going to do 3 stars in about 10 minutes. All right, guys. Domingo Germán said yesterday, and I want to read you the quote, then we can kind of react off of it. It's important to me that I have the opportunity to speak directly with my teammates, both individually and collectively, and address them face to face before I speak to the media and our fans. I guess, Chris, I guess that's probably right, right? I mean, you want to sit there and you want to at least have a conversation with your teammates and take their temperature and tell them how sorry and whatever else it is you have to do before you address the media.
Well, yeah, you got to get ahead of it because you know that your teammates are going to be asked about how they feel about playing alongside you after what took place. You know what I mean? This was something that was out of sight, out of mind last year because he was suspended for the entire season. But now, you know, teammates have to address it in their commentary to the media and to the fans. And so, you know, if you're Domingo Germán, you owe them that to be able to have that conversation and tell them about where you were, where you are right now, the work that you've been doing to try to improve not only as a player but as a person. And I think that's something that you have to do face-to-face. That's something that you got to do to each guy in that locker room and then to have the opportunity to address the team to kind of set the tone for what you want to be moving forward. I think all of those things are important before you make any public comments regarding what happened and being a part of the 2021 Yankees.
Rick, more from Domingo Germán. He says, quote, this process has begun, but more time is needed, especially since half our team is yet to report to spring training. I recognize that speaking publicly will be an important step for me, and I will do so in the upcoming days.
Yeah, I mean, the most important thing for him to do is address his teammates. And it sounds like he's going to take the time to do that each, you know, as a team and individually for anyone that has questions and everything else. But, I mean, I think that even if you're a teammate and you know Domingo Germán and you spend time with him, I still think it's just human nature to – because I think we did the same thing. Like, when you start talking about what he did, you know, in public, and he was comfortable enough doing that in public, I mean, your mind starts to run wild as to, you know, what's going on behind closed doors that we don't know about.
Exactly. I mean, if you're willing to, you know, become abusive to your girlfriend at a public Yankees event, I don't think it's crazy that people have had their imaginations run wild. And I'm sure his teammates have probably had that as well. Is what if this guy's willing to do that here, what is he doing behind closed doors?
But I think that's why it's so important to address this with your teammates and each guy, because I need to be assured that you've learned your lesson and this isn't something it's going to happen again.
Well, it can't happen again. I mean, if anything like this happens again, he's done in baseball, you'd think.
No, obviously not. But you're also having – I mean, guys are being like – I mean, you saw how Zach Britton reacted to the question.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so guys are going to – it becomes, you know, your business because you're being asked about it. And you like – I mean, if you're going to support him, you want to know what you're supporting.
Mm-hmm.
I can't just blindly support this guy. Yeah, he's learned his lesson. I need to know that you've learned your lesson if I put my name behind them, my support. Because if this happens again, I look bad too because I supported him.
And then Domingo Germán has got to come to the realization that no matter what he's done or what he does moving forward, it's not going to be good enough for some of his teammates. Like some of those guys, some of the fan base, they're never going to accept him again the way that they once did prior to that incident happening. It's just not going to happen. He's going to have to get comfortable with that idea and be able to do his job at a high level moving forward, knowing that there are going to be some guys in that locker room that don't want him there.
That's right. And you'd have to figure there's a good portion of that locker room that might not want him there. Here is the skipper of the Yankees, Aaron Boone, on Germán speaking to the team before he addresses the media.
I just think it's something that's very important that Domingo, you know, comes to that place on, you know, on his own. Of course, we're here to support him and encourage in different ways. But I think, you know, for it to be authentic, I think it's really important, you know, for him to get there. And I know he's already started the process having individual conversations with a number of players. I know he's had some long conversations with a number of Spanish-speaking players already. You know, obviously with position players having not started yet, I know he's waiting on that a little bit. So, you know, I think it's wise of him to, you know, hold off on that before he's able to really address everyone he feels like he needs to.
I'm not saying it's wrong, but this has to be a very stressful time for Germán, no? I mean, you're going to spring training. You don't know what anybody thinks about you. You don't know if your teammates want you there or don't want you there. I mean, you're coming off a – you haven't pitched in 2 years now. This has to be a very stressful time for him, I would think.
It probably is, Dave, but I don't care about it.
And I agree with that.
I'm sure a lot of his teammates don't, and a lot of the fan base doesn't. I mean, he put himself in this situation by, you know, the despicable treatment of it toward his girlfriend back at that charity event in 2019. And so now he's going to have to deal with that. So there's going to be a ton of pressure on him coming into this year because everybody's going to be like, okay, the juice better be worth the squeeze. I mean, if the organization and the players on that team went through such lengths to kind of keep it quiet and to cover it up in order to pave the way for you to be able to rejoin the team at some point after your suspension, it damn well better be worth it. So, I mean, this, we talked about the Yankees that have a lot of pressure coming into 2021. I mean, Domingo Germán is right up there at the top of the list.
Yeah, he certainly does. All right. There was something over the weekend was really, really a kind of gross story, and not to the level of Germán, but there was a kid, I don't know if you guys saw this, a kid at Cam Newton's football camp who, so disrespectful. And we have the audio, and here is this quarterback, young kid, who went right after and aggressively Cam Newton.
You ass! You're a free agent! You're a free agent!
I'm rich!
You're a free agent!
I'm rich!
You're about to be pulled!
I'm rich!
You're about to be pulled!
I'm rich!
You're about to be pulled!
I'm rich!
You're a free agent!
I'm rich!
You're a free agent!
I'm rich!
He's a free agent!
Where's your daddy? Let me talk to your dad! Let me talk to your dad! Where's your dad?
He's a free agent!
Where's your dad?
He's a free agent!
Talk to your dad! I'm not talking to the boy!
He's a free agent! You ass!
Talk to him! Where's your dad? Where's your pop?
You ass!
Where's your dad?
I mean, what is this kid doing? I mean, Cam Newton is giving his time to coach at a football camp, and this is the reaction that he gets from a camper there?
Yeah, I don't understand it, Dave.
It's awful.
I don't get it. I mean, Cam Newton hosting his annual 7-on-7 tournament with all of these kids from that area coming to participate in it, and it's like this kid shows up to show up Cam Newton at his own event. I didn't understand where the win was for the kid. Like, Cam Newton's asking for the kid, where's his dad? Like, somebody come get this young man because he's out of line. He's out of pocket. I don't get it. Doesn't make any sense to me. Kid needs his ass whoop is what he needs.
It's tremendously disrespectful.
No, but
is what
it's,
it is.
It's disgusting. It really is, Dave.
I don't know what the bet. I mean, I guess he got what he wanted was Cam Newton to react to it.
Well, and he got his 15 minutes of fame also, right?
Well, if you want to call that fame, I think it's, I mean, the kid should be embarrassed for what he did. I mean, who are you? I mean, he's a free agent. Okay, he's a free agent. He's also a former MVP and he's played in the Super Bowl. I mean, what have you done? The answer to that question is nothing. I'll tell you right now, that is one of my biggest pet peeves, period. Is a lack of respect like that to people that deserve respect.
Yes.
That drives me crazy.
How many times do we hear about athletes that don't give back? All the time. He couldn't do more. Well, you know what? This is a guy that actually does give back, and this kid has the audacity to get into his face and be disrespectful like that? This bothers me to no end. This is a terrible story. Now, yeah, he went out and he apologized, and I'm sure he kind of felt forced into it.
Doesn't matter, though, Dave. The apology rings hollow, man. Nobody wants to hear
that
garbage.
And I thought it was a terrible apology, too. Yeah, I don't know if you read the apology. At the end of it, it said, you know, I hope this doesn't affect me and my future and the people look at me the same. It's like, come on. It's not everything is about you.
Yeah, I mean, listen, man, the apology means nothing. The kid is old enough to know better. I get it. Some people are saying, well, he's a kid. Yeah, but he's in high school. He knows better than to go up there to that event and show out the way that he did. Like, this is all about the kid clout chasing, but it's a microcosm of where today's young people are. And I don't want to sound like the old man that's saying, get off my lawn. But, I mean, they'll do anything for their 5 minutes of fame. And that's exactly what the kid was after.
And you know what? He got his 15 minutes of fame. All right, Raymond. I want to give you a moment. Get your thoughts together. It is a Tuesday. We do the three stars Monday through Friday. So that falls in line with that. And it is now your opportunity for three stars.
Today's three stars of DCR. Number three.
I love how you took basically 2 minutes to go through the intro, by the way, but all good. Moving on. Number three star of the day is going to be Coach Rick DiPietro. Congratulations on win number one and win number two. I was corrected on the young hockey season. I look forward to hearing a lot of those post-game recaps, much like the one you gave us earlier.
Yeah, good win for the first game. Not a lot of practice time, trying to figure out lines and everything else, but it was a good first one. It was nice to get everyone back. I mean, you can just see how, I mean, these kids, it's been a tough year in them to get them back, and like, especially the seniors. I mean, playing on their high school team, it's a big deal. I forgot how much, I mean, you don't realize how much you miss it until you're finally back and coaching the game, but it was great.
Sounded kind of rushed there, no?
Very rushed. Very rushed.
We'll take a listen as the season progresses.
Number two.
Keeping with the coaching theme, I can't pass up that Bobby Knight story. The cherries, the pools.
Yeah.
You know, Tom Thibodeau likes to basically say after every game that he's not happy unless he's miserable. So I kind of get the mindset. Maybe Bobby Knight took that to a much bigger extreme and he just wanted to be as close to death as possible and use that as a motivation factor. I don't know, but clearly there was something there and it was working for him. So good on Bobby Knight.
Number one.
Shout out to the fans going back to Madison Square Garden starting tonight. If you're in the building, give a shout out to the radio booth. Point up Ed and Brendan. Those guys working hard all season long. And welcome back to Madison Square Garden, guys.
Beautiful. Wonderful. The three stars he remembered. We'll be back tomorrow morning at 5. Go Knicks. Rule 76.
No excuses playing a champion. It's DiPietro, Canty, Rothenberg, and...
Hey, everybody.
On 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg podcast.
I have nothing left!
Hear more of DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg live weekday mornings from 5 to 8 a.m. on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play ESPN New York 98.7.